More of Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. You know, when the coronavirus first began spreading here in Idaho, the healthcare system was primarily focused on the physical health of people. Now, while those concerns do continue, some are also raising alarm bells about the mental health challenges that come with a pandemic, especially in rural parts of the state where there is a lack of mental health services to begin with. This issue can be even more acute. So we were curious to understand more about this and how to make sure people get the help they need. We are joined now by two mental health professionals in different parts of our state. Myra Campbell is a therapist at Nimiipuu Health Clinic and a registered member of the Nez Perce tribe. Chris Edwards is a psychologist with St. Luke's Clinic Behavioral Health Services in Twin Falls. I want to thank both of you for joining us today.
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks Absolutely. For having us today. Appreciate it.
You know, and a quick disclaimer for our listeners, I nor no one on our staff are mental health experts. If you are going through a hard time, there is help. A good place to start is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. That number is 1-800-950-6264. Myra, I'd like to start with you. The Nez Perce Reservation, it is in north central part of our state and a really tight-knit community. You had your first confirmed case of COVID-19 back in April, I believe, or early May. And we know that this pandemic is bringing up a lot of anxiety, loneliness, depression. So what can you tell us about the kinds of things that you're hearing within your community?
Oh, at this time, I think we also learned that there are more cases that have gone unnoticed just for the fact people weren't showing any symptoms, but now we're really testing and going out and finding out there's a lot more. With that going, I think there's a lot of fear in the community yet. Some people that aren't really practicing the social distancing are wearing masks. Little people are ambivalent about that and not doing that. So in a way, I think it sets an overall kind of fear amongst the community and not wanting to go places or not wanting to contact family, you know, and it's sad. And it's kind of in this knowing that the family members that are sick are, you know, because we're such a collective community, we're all feeling that and feeling, you know, a lot of prayers going out to the families that are sick. So I think people are pulling together in a way to help each other out to try to do the best we can to help others, but also keep ourselves safe.
And Chris, down in Twin Falls, there has been a recent spike in coronavirus cases. So from a mental health perspective, how are people faring in the Magic Valley?
Well, it's a great question you point out. I think it, like Myra associated too, I think we're seeing this, I guess, probably more a little bit of a rebound, I think, in terms of with the social distancing kind of laxing a bit. I think what it leads to is there's a sense of a lack of control, a sense of uncertainty, a sense of anxiety that is kind of created. You know, the COVID virus has brought with us, just in 5 months ago, January, we would have never thought we're in the situation we're in now. And as human beings, we enjoy the control. We enjoy a sense of independence. We enjoy a sense of ability to make choices in our life. And those things, for a large degree, have sort of been taken away, all for good reason. And now we've at a point where we're in phase two from the governor's outline right now, and with the sense of, okay, we're seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think when you see that happen, you see sort of the excitement of it, and then we see the kind of a rebound of cases, which is sort of to be expected. I think it raises the anxiety for people again in terms of, oh my gosh, when is this ever actually going to go away? So I think that's that sense of anxiety, a little bit of uncertainty that leads to a great deal of emotional distress.
Well, and Chris, you bring up a good point too about, you know, as we do start to kind of slowly reopen things, are you concerned that there might be another influx of people who are needing mental health care just from a standpoint, and maybe they've not had it or needed it in the past, but like I'm finding myself, even though you can, you know, dine in at a restaurant now, or, you know, and gyms are reopening, I find myself not wanting to do those things yet. And because I have this sense of anxiety that I didn't have before, and I can't be the only person having those feelings.
Well, no, I don't. Well, no, you're the only person.
I'm the only one.
It's just you.
It's
you know, I think it's a great point you bring up. I think, you know, for, I think even the average person out there, you know, is experiencing some anxiety, some worry about, gosh, should I really be doing this or not? And probably a sense of anxiety and worry that we typically would not have, a little bit of that sort of obsessive kind of, is this really okay? I'm washing my hands more than I usually would, all these kind of things that, that kind of lead to some degree of anxiety. Even for the normal person who wouldn't typically expect that, what's even more problematic is for folks who sort of have an underlying mental health condition or underlying depression or anxiety, it makes it even more difficult for them because, you know, we all sort of have a baseline threshold of emotional tolerance that we have, so to speak. And once it gets above that sort of threshold, then we start to experience our own degree of emotional distress, if it's anxiety, depression, whatever it might be. I think what we're seeing now is COVID, to some degree, is raising, or just is kind of raising the degree of distress that everybody has. So our own threshold for things to be able to tolerate things is less than it typically is. So it's like COVID is almost like, you know, reducing our ability to cope with things that we would typically be able to cope with, just because of that unknown and that anxiety just lowers our typical emotional distress level so that we can't deal with things that we typically would be able to deal with, because there's just that constant sense of kind of wondering and worry.
And then on top of it, both of you have had to change the way you practice because, like Chris, we know your clinic had to close its doors, but you started doing video and phone therapy and evaluations in March. What's that transition been like for not just for you, but for your patients?
You know, it's a great question. You know, I think for virtual health, you know, we think of telehealth, we think of telephonically, we think of virtual, like video. And video is the preferred method because, you know, for example, for me, I like to be able to see someone's face and the interactions at home. First off, it's been a real silver lining to be able to have that ability to be able to do that with our patients. So for that, it's been really positive. So it's allowed us to be able to continue to meet with our patients in that way. But it's different. It's different in terms of the relationship that you have with a patient. You can't always see everything that they're doing. And sometimes our nonverbal behaviors, we pick up so much in communication. So that's a bit of a difference. And some of our patients have really enjoyed it. For example, it makes it easier for them, instead of having to take, you know, a couple hours away to, I have to leave my work to drive in, to have my appointment, to wait and go for my appointment and drive back. I can just hop on. It saves me some time in the day. But some people don't like it. You know, some people, they just don't feel as comfortable with that. They don't feel necessarily as comfortable with the technology. And for those people, and that's not the majority of people, but for those people it can be a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. But I think really overall, it's a really positive thing. But for probably more the exception of people, it's just a bit of a struggle. But it's just something new. And whenever we do something new, there's always some challenges that go along with it from both of us as providers and for our patients also.
And Myra, how is it working within your community, this telephonic and video therapy?
Yes, I think Chris also said it too. It's kind of here and there. We do have some people that have actually enjoyed coming on and being able to talk virtually, you know, whether it's through a web app on our phone, Doxy, you know, Cisco, all those things. People are trying to utilize those. And if not, they're calling too, and just with the same amount of, you know, people that have never gone to see a counselor before are now coming out and going, you know what, I'm having some difficulty with my life right now because now I'm isolated. I have anxieties going on. Maybe a family member passed away, and just those things that we do normally, we're unable to do those things, you know, like having ceremonies for people, you know, so we are getting a lot of just calls over the telephone saying this is going on and I'm not sure how to deal with this. And well, I know you mentioned something. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Myra.
And I think we mentioned a good thing before was that how do we take care of ourselves as mental health providers to go, you know, hey, we still need to do this and meet people and talk with people. But I think self-care is such a big thing because just like you said, I was getting anxiety myself and going, okay, this is feeling overwhelming because I'm getting a lot of calls. I'm getting a lot of people that are going over and over. Maybe they have substance abuse. Maybe they're having panic attacks, but something's going on. They're unable to handle it. And then also look at my own stuff and go, oh, wait, maybe I really need some self-care right now. So I really need to step back and take a break and go, okay, refocus. So I really understand where you're coming from when you're talking about your own anxiety.
Yeah, because I think everyone has to feel some sense of that right now. Chris, I have just about a minute left, and I'd like to wrap up just knowing from a parental standpoint about how we take care of our kiddos' anxiety right now. Like, what is, you know, what should we not worry about, and what should maybe be a worry? And, you know, just as an example with my 8-year-old, you know, ever since the earthquake on March 31st, he ends up in our room every single night. And right.
Oh yeah. I'm so glad you asked that question. And I think for our kiddos, you know, one thing, there's a couple of quick things I can think to keep in mind is the biggest thing that we can do for our kids is to help keep a sense of routine, help keep a sense of normalcy, excuse me. So, you know, it's kind of the same kind of pattern we would typically follow for the school day. We get up at the same time, we eat breakfast, we get our studies done, we go outside and play. Kind of keeping a rhythm and routine is really important. There's kind of a tendency sometimes as parents, I think, that we just want to say, hey, it's summer days, let's just let our kids sleep in and do these different things. As much as it may seem a little bit easier, kids actually do so much better with structure and routine. So I think that's incredibly important to keep in mind. It's important if we talk about these things, we talk about things that are age appropriate. It's okay to talk to our older kids about what is COVID, how does it affect the body and stuff like that. You know, teenagers can understand those kind of things. Younger kids, they don't get that. So I think just talking about it, it's something that can make people sick, but you're okay. Mom and dad are going to keep you safe. I think that's very important. Things to be aware of, if your kiddos are really struggling to sleep, if they're really overly emotional more than normal, if they seem to, like you said, they're coming in and sleeping in your room, but maybe there's just that comfort level of it. But if they're doing that and having, you know, for example, nightmares and things like that, they're getting out of control. If you're seeing extreme emotional behaviors, lots of anger swings, things like that, that's out of the norm for your child and not going away, those would be signs that they're probably having a hard time dealing with things more than the typical we would want them to expect. And you may want to consider going to see your primary care doctor or perhaps going to see a mental health provider to talk about what might be going on.
I want to thank both of you for taking time today. We've been talking with Myra Campbell, a therapist and registered member of the Nez Perce Tribe, and Chris Edwards, a psychologist with St. Luke's in Twin Falls. You're listening to Idaho Matters.